Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus. Rocket Mortgage, confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, musician Lucas Nelson. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and RJ Bell calls in for RJ's Parlay. And now, thanking the Cowboys and Cardinals for reminding everyone last night to download this podcast and take a knee. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on Monday. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for doing what you do, man. We'll talk to RJ Bell and a couple of you. Two for two, by the way. One is parlay. Mm-hmm. So now he's back. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Cool.
Oh, got to get... is that sunny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know why I hadn't told this one in a while, but I was thinking about it. When I was talking with Ray, we were discussing Ray putting his dick in his mom's friend's ear, Kathy, when she was sitting by the front front of the kitchen there. One thing I was present for that I forgot about, if you'd like to know everything you need to know about Ray, when he was about 19, his mom was managing, after his mom and his dad split up, his mom would manage the apartment, get the free rent, and she worked, but she'd manage like the 6-unit building. Mm-hmm. And she was in the kitchen one evening, and I think Ray was living there at the time. It was the house Ray was arrested at. Like, literally, marshals came in and removed him from the house.
Not for the dick in the ear.
No, because the city doesn't get any money from that.
Right.
But they do get them from warrants for parking tickets.
Got it.
So that's where they sent the marshals over for. But when we're standing, Ray's mom and Dad had broken up, and I think had both gotten together with the couple that was their best friend couple. I imagine this happens more than not. I mean, they make movies and stuff about it, but I think it happens in real life a fair bit. Okay. That couple you spend a lot of time with as an adult, at some point, somebody just figures, look, why don't we just swap that for this and this for that?
We're halfway there. Spend all our time together.
Right. So so they did. And his mom then took up with a fella named Jim. And a little weird because Jim was formerly the guy who would come over with the wife and, you know, play Parcheesi.
Uncle Jim.
At a certain point, though, Ray said to his mom, earnestly, whose dick is bigger?
Oh, God.
Dad's or Jim's? And
the universal question.
Can you imagine?
No, no.
Could you ever imagine? Like, no. Like, you know, I think people, I don't think people fully understand. Like, they have friends where they're like, oh, dude, this dude would get up, you know, and throw water balloons at cop cars or something. Like, but they don't fully grasp what Ray was, you know?
It's hard to grasp. He's a force of nature.
And what his mom gave it some thought, and said that his dad was longer, but that Jim was wider. And I was standing there when this all went down thinking, why do I have to be a part of this?
It's your first lesson on boundaries.
Yeah.
And the need for them.
Yes, except for I could not escape. I mean, it's an interesting thing that people who have the who do the things in front of other people.
You can't run out the window without creating a scene. Really, you're kind of stuck there.
Cartoon
character.
Kind of trapped in the kitchen. I, not since, or probably... I mean, I don't know that you can do better. I just don't know that you can do better than the time we were doing the table read during the show where we found out, first found out that Brian had the brain tumor. So Brian wasn't present for this, but we were standing in front of the young lady who was the showrunner, and for lack of a better term. But layman's terms, she sort of was in charge of hiring and firing and coordinating everything. When Brian couldn't come into work, I had to tell her. She was the one who was in charge of everything. Very, very proud because her uncle or grandfather was Danny Thomas.
Oh.
And a big love fest with Marlo Thomas and Free to Be You and Me. And Jimmy was there. And everyone was standing around telling her what big fans we were.
St. Jude.
St. Jude of the philanthropic work she'd done, he'd done, and everyone would done. And in the middle of this circle of talking, of just writing a love letter to Danny Thomas and all the...
The Thomas family.
Make room for
and the
Daddy.
The Thomas family. Make room for everything else. Little Pam Adlon scurried into the conversation. So it was like one of those, there were six people standing around and she walked into it and she was sort of like, what's everyone talking about? And we're like, did you know that her grandfather is Danny Thomas? And without missing a beat, Pam went, oh my God, what's going on with the coffee table?
No.
Everyone was just like,
no.
Because before there was Richard Gere in The Gerbil.
Yeah.
And before there was Rod Stewart and having to have his stomach pumped, there was Danny Thomas and the glass coffee table.
Yeah.
That was the scatological urban myth. Yeah. And she dove right to it.
No.
And I had no idea. Now it's weird because you do feel like you'd like to just run and do that move where you run and there's just one feather floats down from where you were, like it was like in the cartoons, you know, just and it's just like one feather just floats down.
But your shoes are still there and there's a cloud of smoke. I'm like, Adam, the smoke dissipates in your car.
You have to stand there. And then the worst is when the person catches themselves. Now, Ray would never catch himself.
What?
Pam did a... Like out of a movie or the things you never, that happen in romantic comedies that you don't think ever happen, where she just went like, what's up with the glass coffee table? And then she went, oh my God, I'm so sorry I said that. And then it got a lot worse after that. Like,
what did the granddaughter do? Was she horrified?
No.
Exasperated?
I wish it's when everyone is overly, no, we hear it all the time. Like now it starts getting.
Now it becomes somehow more awkward.
Oh, yes.
Like, I've never heard that before. It would have been far less awkward.
Yes. Yes, we could have moved right along. Your grandfather was famous for refurbishing coffee tables. Had you not known that chapter in his life? Very interesting.
Don't Google it, but it's well-known fact.
All right. So RJ Bell's going to be calling in. We'll talk to him about what's going on in the football world. I don't know about, they say the ratings are low, but who knows? Ratings, certain things about, the thing about ratings is, it's sort of like me with the vintage sports cars. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to have a graph where things just constantly move up. Like, just it just started. Hey, the car started at 100 grand. It's now $1 million, and the graph just goes straight from 100 to a million. Right. There has to be points in 2011 where you saw it dip. Like, it was at 350, and then it went down to 275. Mm-hmm. Like, because that's how. Otherwise, it's not really a chart.
Right.
It's a right angle.
Unbroken.
Yeah. That's how all economies, right. all ratings, right. all every graph, real life. Estate, yeah. life. Right. So. The ratings being down in terms of the whole take a knee thing, I don't know. I don't know if there's a connection or not. I'm not drawing a straight line to it.
There very well might be, but I have to imagine it's a much, much, much bigger reason that so many people are streaming their entertainment today. Like, how many cord cutters are there who are still... The NFL game in London this week was exclusively streamed on Yahoo.
Right.
Like, it's got to affect the ratings, right. but, like, I'm sure the same number of eyeballs, if not, give or take.
And that, too, and anytime something's controversial and people say that they're going to sit it out, I can only imagine that makes people more curious. People who don't even watch football want to know what all the hullabaloo's about.
Indeed.
Like yeah. me.
Yeah, so who knows, and we'll see what
I streamed half my football. RJ. I just streamed half my football this weekend on the DirecTV app because I up and around, I'm out in front of my TV the whole time.
Yeah, I've kind of realized that I've been bitten by my own snake in that I've long said to everybody, when you get the multiple everything, it kind of wears things. It's not. You enjoy it less.
Meaning what?
I think. All right. I'll bring it around to this situation. I've famously said when Natalia was about 5 or 6, I think she had the worst Christmas ever because she made a list for Santa and her list had about 128 things on
sure.
it, and Lynette just went out and treated that list. I wish she'd treat some of my lists like she treated that list.
My Christmas wish is to put the keys back where you found them.
Where's the... We're going to talk to the pool man 2 months ago. Was that on the list?
Oh, for Christmas.
She treated this list like she was like an orthopedic surgeon, and these were the parts... And she was going to perform surgery on an island. And this is what she needed to perform surgery on an island.
Wow.
And like you could never go... You couldn't go to another part of the hospital. You couldn't pick it up. Like... She treated this list of, pink mucklucks or pink Uggs and everything on it. My Little Dolly Pony, everything. She got every single thing on this list. And she delivered it on Christmas morning. And Natalia tore from one to the next. She barely got each package open before she tore to the next package with her name on it. And I never felt misery coming off a kid like I felt that day coming off of Natalia, who's normally a pretty fun, pretty easy, pretty good kid. And not only was she miserable while she was opening packages, going from package to package to package, but...
Oh, another gift. This pile never ends.
She was miserable that day, like the whole day, like at 3 p.m, found her sort of moping around the house. And I realized you cannot have everything you ask for at once. You go insane.
It's a fictional character, but you guys remember Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka? She had everything. Oh, it's an Oompa Loompa. Nah. She was miserable.
She's a bad egg.
She couldn't get that next thing, whatever the next thing was that she wanted.
Chasing that dragon.
I want one of those, and she was miserable until she got that thing. And then
Everything now makes you miserable. Everything now... Not so much if you earn everything, but then you don't get everything now. You earn it sort of incrementally. But everything now really makes you miserable, and especially when it's dumped off, when it's delivered, when it just gets dropped off in your lap. I mean, you know, even as a mature adult, and a kid's wiring is not, can't handle it all. But if you said to yourself, like, hey, what do we got? Like, what are you looking for out of life? And you want, I want Jimi Hendrix Stratocaster that he played at Woodstock. Mm-hmm. Okay. What else do you like? I want the 917 Porsche that Steve McQueen drove at Le Mans.
Can okay. Do. What's next?
All right. 23-year-old Cindy Crawford.
Done.
Make that happen.
Lots of water-soluble lube. I want...
Cindy Crawford.
Let's see. Oh, I want... I'd like to meet Abe Lincoln. I'd like to sit down with Abe Lincoln and have a heart to heart with Abe Lincoln. Oh, and Kennedy. Oh, and Marilyn Monroe. Oh, and I want to talk about Marilyn Monroe to Kennedy, and Kennedy about Marilyn Monroe. And let's see. I would like the crown jewels, and I'd like the Hope Diamond, and I'd like the most expensive Picasso painting. And then someone went, yeah. And then they all showed up at once in the same place. I think you would stand in the middle of all of them, and you'd probably be unhappy.
You'd be underwhelmed.
You'd be overwhelmed. You'd be sort of confused.
You wouldn't be as whelmed as you would by the single one of any one of those things.
You'd be overwhelmed and underwhelmed, like simultaneously. And I don't think you'd enjoy any one of the singular experiences nearly as much as you would if you broke them all off, spread them out over a lifetime, or worked feverishly for years to get a look at the Hope Diamond versus here it is. So there is no such thing as making someone happy that way. And when you do it to a five-year-old, they just completely
meltdown,
spin into outer space. And that's when I kind of learned that everything at once was nothing at once, and it was sort of misery. And all of us, if we think back on our favorite Christmas or birthday or Hanukkah.
Thank you.
You think about, the year I got that Schwinn bicycle, that bike, right, or that baseball mitt, or that thing. Yes, that one thing, and I got on that bike, and I took off, you know, and I was gone all day, you know, and I brought the bike into my room that night. I slept with it, you know, like put it in my room, you know, like it's that one thing. It's literally, it's super easy. You get the pony, or you get 26 ponies. 26 ponies doesn't make a kid happy. It's that one pony. I'm going to feed it an apple from my mouth.
You know,
who's more obnoxious? Feed the horse from the mouth person, or walk with ferret on shoulder person?
Walk with shoulder on ferret person is parading that ferret up and down the street on the Venice Pier. They're bringing it out into the world. They're putting your face. At least horse person's in the stable doing it.
Mildly perverted.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's significantly better. I'm saying it's a little better.
Okay.
They're keeping it to themselves in the stable.
Okay. I'm kind of with you.
I can sort of...
And besides, walk with ferret on shoulder guy is a serial rapist.
Oh, that guy's screaming for...
With a rabid animal.
Yes, that guy's a sexual predator. That is not... the ferret on the shoulder guy. Yeah, that guy. He's only trying to get laid.
Yeah.
He's only trying to get laid.
Poto and Poto.
I can kind of prove your point about the pony.
Yes.
For my, I don't know, seventh birthday, my parents rented a pony for the backyard with all the little kids over. And there's still a VHS tape of me losing my mind that there was a pony in the backyard. And not only did I get to ride the pony around the backyard first, but when all the other kids had their turn, I got to do it again. And that was it. And it was the best day of my life.
So now, coming full circle, being bitten by my own snake, I now have the NFL package. We pull down the big screen, and there's seven games showing at once. I'm never sure which sound is from what game, because there's one sound, but seven games, and I have to kind of look around to try to figure out which one it's coming from. Yeah. I find myself not enjoying the seven games simultaneously nearly as much as I do with one singular. Now,
it's a job.
If it's a good game versus a bad game, but I still find myself
drifting,
picking a game and just going, we're going full screen with this. We shall commit to this one game and watch it. Because also, you're sitting around with 11 guys that are watching seven games, so everyone's watching one 6.7 games.
Reacting different things.
And then you'll yell, and then you'll hear Hench yell, beta screen, horrible, horrible call on the beta screen. And then you try to figure out which one the second screen is or the alpha screen.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
It's like,
that's confusing.
It's fun because you're sitting around with guys you like getting drunk, but more it is an example of more not being merrier.
Yeah.
And I think we're running into a bigger picture. I think we're running into that in terms of society. All right. RJ Bell is on the line. I'll tell you guys about A&E's Undercover High, groundbreaking new docuseries. Gives a no holds barred view of life and the minds of today's American high school teens. Premieres October 10th. 12 episodes. 7 young adults from different cultures, ages 21 to 26, embed themselves.
I'm into this.
Mm-hmm.
Me too, especially.
Jump Street.
Topeka, Kansas.
Yes!
Highland Park High.
Yes!
Go Muskrats. Go ferrets on shoulders. Go shoulder ferrets.
Kodo and Podo.
Go Kodo and Podo. Yeah, man. They go undercovers. Typical students attending classes, making friends, and participating in clubs and activities. The participants are unaware of each other. I like this part. Only school administrators and select members of the community know their true identities. Premieres October 10th on A&E. All right, RJ. RJ Bell.
Adam, how are you?
Good, man. RJ going 2 for 2, winning his parlay last week. Can I say this? First off, watching the Patriots last week, rooting against the Patriots, sitting with Kevin Hench, the biggest Patriots fan, and I always say, when you're the coach, do what the other team doesn't want you to do. And when it's 4th and 28 inches... don't kick the field goal when Kevin Hench is screaming, please don't go for it. Please kick the field goal. Like every Patriot fan doesn't want you to go for it, and you don't, and you kick the field goal. You watch that game. Brady gets the ball back, and Brady has a couple minutes, but he's got to score a touchdown. He gets stripped when he's, well, first off, there's like a 3rd and 18 he converts. Also, he drops back in the pocket and just gets stripped. Just comes around the back, just clean strip, ball just pops up into the air. That alone is game over, but it pops right into the hands of one of his linemen who falls on it. And then 2 plays later, the next play, he just airs it out. The DB gets a weird sort of hand position on it, like not the right direction. But at some point when he's coming down, just has the ball tucked in, just like... literally, the DB just has the ball, like, just tucked into his gut. Like, okay, game over, pick, the ball's tucked
secured,
in. It's just secured. It's he lands on the ground. Somehow the ball just scurries away. And then, of course, I turn to Hench and go, well, good news. Now you have to score a touchdown so we can look back on this play. I think there may have been one other play, but how do the Patriots do this? And then how does everyone let them do it? Like, don't you know you're playing the Patriots?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is when it's...
no team capitalizes better on second chances
than
the
Patriots.
When
it's 3rd and 28 inches and you got a running game and you've been doing well all game, you go for it. Mm-hmm. You don't kick it and go, well, don't worry, they have Tom Brady.
Yeah, but put it in Tom Brady's hands.
We have
just
a 4.5-point lead.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a couple things. One, when you have Houston plus 14, you don't worry about that stuff.
Yeah.
That's one of the fun things about a big underdog. Number two, let's let Vegas odds guide the way on the decision-making. And I think you're right, Adam. You want to do what the other team doesn't want you to do, but Vegas can tell you a lot, too. When New England got that kick, they were only plus 130 underdogs. So, you know, 101, you 130 if the Pats would have won the game. So a little less than 50%, let's say, right?
Right.
Well, what were the odds that Houston could have got that first down? Should be much better than 50%, right?
Oh, that's an interesting point.
And at that point, they wouldn't have been able to run out the clock totally, but almost.
Right. So what RJ's saying, to go very sort of specific about it, is if Tom Brady gets the ball on the 20-yard line with 2 minutes and 2 timeouts, there's a 50-50 chance he's going to score a touchdown, according to Vegas odds. But according to Vegas odds, there's a better than 50-50 chance that the Texans convert the first down and never get the ball back to right. Brady. So go with the better odds, right?
Exactly. And if you actually watch the in-game odds, so there's an ability in Vegas or online, and this is dangerous, right? If you're compulsive, you can bet after every play.
It's the best thing ever. Oh, my God. It's really fantastic.
And the odds... Oh, so Brian, you're familiar with it.
Yeah, so I've done many in-game bets.
What were the odds then that they would convert that first?
Well, we wouldn't know, we didn't know that because they didn't put the odds out till they made the decision. But here's what is fascinating, Adam. When they made the decision to kick, the odds improved for the Patriots significantly.
Right.
So you'll see that all the time. Go for it on fourth or don't. And the market will tell you if it's the right decision or the wrong decision. Remember back, I mean, this has been maybe 6 years ago now. Brady went for it and Belichick on fourth down on their own, like, 30
right.
against Peyton Manning and the Colts. Remember that?
Yep, I do.
That's, again, Belichick understanding it is a scary thing to go for it, but the odds are better oftentimes the more aggressive you are.
As far as the ratings, we were discussing the ratings being down a little bit for the NFL. Some people speculating maybe all the controversy swirling around in the politics. Any thoughts on NFL and ratings this year, RJ Bell?
I follow politics very closely. One, because I bet heavily on it for, let's say, the presidential elections and such.
Yes.
And
can
by
you
the way,
gamble
Trump
on
was...
porn, RJ? I feel like there's a market here. Where you can take two loves and, you know, make your peanut butter cup out of.
Like, oh, yeah. A lot of prop bets.
So what's the two markets?
Porn
oh.
and gambling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what are you going to bet on exactly?
Well, like, does he drop the load on the boobies or does he go with the forehead? Like,
let's just
I don't know.
Prop bets involve actual props.
Does she seem happy about it? Terrified?
Yes. I like indifferent, by the way. But so, RJ, so yes, politics. You follow it closely.
Yeah. So, and to me, one of the most, and I've said this to Mike August, I've said this to you, what you guys have done with Adam Carolla, digital and all that, you were pioneers. There was a potential market there. It wasn't really there. You guys were pioneers, and you've established it. Now people are following behind.
To me,
one of the other groups that have done that has been the right-wing alt. And again, alt now has a very pejorative term to it, but let's just call it the right-wing media. Not Fox, right? Fox did their thing, but I'm talking about guys like an Alex Jones or like us, you know, and I'm not super familiar with all of them, but they get millions of Facebook views and video views, and they're really using these new channels so effectively in a way like you guys did years in the past and you're still doing.
Well, let me jump in for one quick second, RJ.
Yes.
Is there an element of this, which I've always sort of said, which is if there's a boulevard and there are sushi places on every other corner, then you should open a Mexican food joint because you may not do. People still like sushi more, and there may be more people going out and eating sushi, but there are 18 of them, and there's just one of you. And so you're going to get a greater percentage of traffic, even if you don't get greater numbers overall. And if so many of the news outlets are sort of left-leaning or sort of middle-left or whatever, then wouldn't you be smart to just go full hard right to be that Mexican food place? Is that part of what you're saying?
Well, I think it goes one step further. Not only is it an alternative to what the mainstream offers, but now there's an alternative distribution. Right, back in the day, if you didn't want to be on the radio dealing with all the hard breaks and the 6 minute segments, right, that's one of the big advantages of podcasts. Is the fact you didn't want those limitations is what made podcasts so appealing. But prior to the digital revolution, and the ability to have those vertical distributions, you would have been like Christian Slater and pump up the volume maybe with your own radio show.
Deep
but
pull.
It would have
talk hard.
It would have been hard to reach a big audience. So I think the extreme left back or right back in the day would have been, you know, having a little magazine zines and stuff and ham radios, and now they're able to distribute the heck out of it. So kind of to bring it back around, because I'm interested in that alternative distribution, I follow the politics pretty closely. There is a huge audience out there. I don't know if it's 20%, 30% of the electorate that really feels aggrieved on the right, and I know you've talked about this. And when you feel aggrieved, it's emotional. And I think the idea that the players are so far left, and again, this is the perception, like, why am I going to give these people my money? I think there's a significant emotion around that within 20% or so of the electorate.
So you think it has impacted the...
I think significantly, and I think it's going to be more.
So, all right, quick question, a couple of quickies, and then we'll get to your bets. Now, you took Trump to win the election at 6-1, so that was a good bet for you. What is Trump getting reelected? Are there odds down for that now?
Yes, and it's a significant underdog. And what I can do is get the latest and for next week and update you. But
he's like 2.5-1 to win, right? Yeah, around there.
And I've seen odds as extreme as about 50-50 that he finishes his first 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there really is a sense that, and again, keep in mind, he's 71 years old, so, you know, there's always that chance of health issues and all that. But in general, the idea there's going to be some kind of extreme event, which really has happened, what, since Kennedy, we've had Nixon leave office early, and that's it, right?
Yep.
So the idea that something is 50-50 that's happened once since 63, I think is showing you how different things are today.
So he's about 2-1 for the next election.
And personally, I would take Trump right now on that.
You would, and you'd bet $1 to make $2 or whatever.
For sure. I would put the odds, to be candid, if there's an election that he's involved in, as in there isn't some extreme event before, he has to be the favorite. I mean, think about how rare it is that a incumbent loses a presidential election. I mean, it is quite rare.
Right. So you'd be smart to bet now and take Trump, except for we may not get to the election, which is North Korea could fire off the nukes and maybe we'd never see that next election.
But it's one of those things where you're going to lose so bad that way anyway. Yeah. What's the difference?
All right, RJ, let's give our let's review last week. Sorry, your two wins were.
Well, we had the Patriots plus 14 and the obvious Colts to beat the Browns at home as a small underdog.
All right. And so we went 2-for-2. And now this week, hold on, Brian, go ahead.
Football. Gambling. America. Don't sweat the bet. We got Vegas insider RJ Bell. This is RJ's Parlay.
All right.
RJ?
Now, are we able to slip pornography in the list?
There's always room for Jell-O and pornography.
All right, game number one, we're going with the Saints. This is the London game, so West Coast to the early get up or bet early. You know, sometimes the line is usually right in almost all elements, and then there's one or two things potentially the market is mispricing or isn't right about. I think there's something so big in this game, nothing else matters. So we'll talk about one thing. The Dolphins have traveled an insane amount in the last couple of weeks. So obviously the hurricane in Florida, their first game was postponed. They went and stayed on the West Coast for over a week preparing for week number two that was against the Chargers. The Chargers. And thus they were away for a week plus. That was a positive for that game, but then they played that game, flew back home to Miami. First time they actually could deal with the reality of life. And even if you're a millionaire, you have to deal with the reality of life, kids, school, all the things around the hurricane. Then they went and flew back to New York to play the Jets. Now, another flight, they looked horrible in that game, fatigued in that game. Now they've flown back to Miami in a couple of days and then back to London. Now, imagine that with no break. I think that it's not a sexy thing to talk about, the travel and fatigue, but it's going to be the driver in this game. And thus, for that reason and that reason alone, we're going with the Saints, their opponent, favored by 2.5, pick number one.
I like that, and that's why RJ's RJ.
Factoring
in all the boring stuff. And the next bet is what, RJ Bell?
But hopefully saying it in an entertaining fashion.
No.
We'll see.
It's interesting when you get into the mind of a guy who basically does this for a living, where you go, these are all the factors. You start factoring who's injured. Yeah. You know, there's the basic stuff we think about, like who's injured,
who's
or
at home.
How does the guy play on AstroTurf versus natural turf or something, but something like all the travel. So, big deal.
Aren't the Saints already there, RJ? Didn't they go out like on like Sunday or Monday or something like that?
You know, and there's different approaches to it, and some believe going later, some believe going earlier. But whatever it is, Brian, if there's a deficit physically coming in, that trip's difficult.
Yeah. All right, and the next pick.
Next pick, number two, we got the San Francisco 49ers plus 7.5, so over a touchdown at Arizona. And this is a single handicap theory also, which is pretty much you've got two poor teams record-wise, don't have a ton of optimism to make the playoffs or anything, so what are they playing for? On one hand, Arizona's a team that's been in the playoffs multiple times the last few years. They have an old quarterback, Carson Palmer. This is it. After they have a horrible season, they're going to probably change quarterbacks, change multiple coaches perhaps. This is a trend line down with a bad team. The 49ers, on the other hand, they've had some bad seasons. They got a new coach, Shanahan, and there's a ton of optimism. So there's a sense that, yeah, there's some pain now, but we're heading in the right direction. And because once you have teams playing really poorly, motivation is such a big issue, the optimism around the 49ers is so much better than the pessimism or the sense of doom that's really around Arizona right now. Last thing, when you're getting over 7 points, 7.5, well, that's excellent if you have two bad teams. And remember, San Fran played on Thursday, so they had 10 days rest, and Arizona played on Monday night, so it's a short week. You add it up, 49ers plus 7.5.
I like it, RJ Bell. And let me explain. I don't like to talk about myself in general.
Oh, I know. I try to bring it out of you, but it's hard.
But I certainly don't like to talk about myself in terms of being a hero. But here goes.
Break with tradition just this once.
I shall break with tradition just this once and enjoy this because it shall never happen again. I showed up with my football fans, my Cousin Sal's and my Nick Santors and my Kevin Hinches's of the world. And the first thing out of my mouth, see what happens, Gina, is I have a life that involves bad football plays and bad car stuff and bad just about anything. But I don't have anyone I can talk to about it at home because nobody else cares about any of the stuff I'm into or they don't even know what I do.
Exactly. Phil, listen to this. Where are you going? Where are you going?
Phil, get back here. So first thing I do when I get in with the group of fellas who does care, especially about football, I launch immediately into the Rams game with the 49ers where they call the horrible offensive pass interference on the 49er possession receiver on his 10-yard down and out, would have moved the chains, would have moved them into field goal range, and certainly could have moved them 8 yards closer and toward the center of the field and probably got away with the win. Instead, it ended up being 4th and 20, and they never converted. And I went on, and then Cousin Sal like pulled his phone out and showed me the play, and then we all sort of looked at it, and we were screaming, like, where's the interference? Where's the interference? You didn't even see his hands push him or leave his, it's, I don't want to get too technical, Gina, but it was not, it cost him the game. Then I said, why isn't every call reviewable that makes a difference in the outcome of the game? Forget about, well, it's not the last 2 minutes of the game, or, oh, it was a fumble and they blew a whistle and you can't review it, or you can't review it. How about you just can review everything that can affect the outcome of the game in terms of the end of the game? That is a big call. And at a certain point, when I was in the middle of my tirade, heaven,
Kevin Kench.
Kevin Kench.
Hench and some of the other guys looked at me and said, wait a minute, you're a Rams fan. What are you bitching about? And I said, I'm a fan of justice.
Yeah,
I don't like bad calls. I don't like bad. Yes, I'm a Rams fan. I wish everyone else that was a fan of whomever, could be politics, mm-hmm. could be a team,
nice.
Would look at plays a little more clearly and stop making insane arguments yeah. because it's their guy.
Review like, the tape.
The notion that you might be a Rams fan and you would argue vehemently for that horrible call just makes you somewhere between a liar and not and stupid or something. I don't know what it makes you, but you should be able to look at everything and go, I don't care whose fan
I am. It benefited me, but I'll be honest.
That's a bad call.
Get over it, crybaby.
I'm a Rams fan, and that call drove me nuts like all week long, and it's a better wiring than everyone else's. I wish everyone had that wiring. Yes.
One question for me. I'm not saying I'm skeptical, Adam, of what you're saying, but let me give you a hypothetical. Let's say you bet on Mayweather to win against McGregor. Let's say it was a nice chunk. And it went to decision. You in your heart thought McGregor won. Here comes the decision. Who would you like to hear?
I want my goddamn cash. I mean, if I bet. I agree.
Don't be naive, RJ.
No, I would. And RJ, here's where I would be with that. I would then say there have been so many bad boxing calls. These guys are both millionaires. They don't need my money, those stinking bookies. All right, RJ Bell, RJ Bell's Dream Preview. And also, you can go to available on iTunes and Podcast One, the app, and leave a nice rate and review. And shoot him a tweet at RJ in Vegas. Thanks, RJ.
Thank you.
Good guy, man.
RJ Bell. RJ's Parlay.
All right. Yes, Gina Graff.
You know what's kind of funny about this, and I think might make me a catch? I don't really care about football. I don't really like football. I don't understand football. But
sexy.
When I get mm-hmm. flipped off, I'm getting yelled at. But yes. when my guy is at home on a Sunday in his football shirt and watching football all day, because I got him one that says Sunday's God's Day and he's holding a football.
It says Paul Kai.
I like it. I like that he's home chilling, having fun, watching games all day. I make snacks for us. I make tapas. I like to set it down. I like to be in the room while it's happening. Mm-hmm. But I'm not following it. I really don't care. But I like it. I like the vibe.
I'm glad to hear this because Christy seems to like it too. She kind of likes that I enjoy the whole thing. But I always think she's tolerating it. But I'm glad to hear that you genuinely.
Yeah,
you like that.
I like that.
You like
Sunday
that
vibe.
He's happy.
Yeah, he's having fun. I'm making food. It's fine.
Yeah, it's good. It's one of the things that's good about this country of ours. And I think it's part of the argument with everyone and the politicizing everything, which is let's just have a Sunday and root for everybody and have some beers and just to take the day off the politics. All right. Let's see. Any phone calls there? No. Good. Lucas Nelson is out there. He's brought his guitar in here. You may have heard of his dad. Ricky, no. Willie Nelson.
Gunner?
We'll talk to Lucas right after this.
Podcast One Sports presents Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, you can hear Jack Harbaugh.
We're going to attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Jim Harbaugh.
What the hell's going on around here?
And JT Rogan share their stories from on and off the field. Past guests include John Harbaugh, ESPN's Adam Schefter, and Pardon My Takes, PFT, and Big Cat. So don't miss an episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, exclusively on PodcastOne.com and the new Podcast One app. Just a sample of what's coming to Podcast One Sports.
Good sport. It's time for a sports segment. Good sport. It's time for Ace and Dave. Good sport. It's time to get it started. NFL highlights. Mixed martial arts fights. Riffing on bad Stallone movies. Raking the fruits of the year. Dave's recapping Hawker.
Talking,
shooting jerks with blasters,
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to the new episode of Podcast One Sports, Good Sports. Dave Damashek here, Adam Carolla there. Ace, we have a mutual pal. His name is Matt Money Smith. Yeah. He is now the radio voice of the Los Angeles Chargers. I think, like all things, we have to consider what we can get out of this.
Yeah. That's a great wiring. Like, you hear somebody got promoted to CEO of Sony, or became the voice of the Chargers, or is even if they're like junior manager of the local Wendy's or the Costco. And I love human beings, because you hear this thing where it's like, did you hear Gerald was now made night manager of the Target in El Segundo? And you go, oh, good for him. What can he do? What can I get? Some free pants? Can I get free shoes? What could I get? What do they have at that Target that I could go get? You go from good for him part lasts about a hummingbird's heartbeat, and then it immediately switches over to, how can I take advantage of this guy's fortune or hard work? Like, what can I do for myself?
You're absolutely right, and I have some ideas on how we can take advantage of Matt Money Smith's good fortune here. That does remind me. Have you noticed, too, that everybody, I don't know if it's narcissism or vanity. I think it's the latter. I think I've noticed a lot of people now, like Jimmy Kimmel is doing great stuff, fighting the man. You know,
right.
He's been fighting the man on his late night show, going up against those senators. And I feel like people like to put out there, they want you to know that they know Jimmy Kimmel. As a, for instance, like, couldn't be prouder to call Jimmy Kimmel a friend right now. You know, like, right. Do you think that that's stealing the shine a little bit, or taking a little bit of the, basking in the reflected glory?
Meaning away
from like,
you
it's
who
not just
are
saying,
grandfathered
like, Jimmy
in?
Kimmel's doing great work. It's proud to call Jimmy Kimmel a friend for what he's doing right now.
Well, I think there's a lot of glory. Look, it's the, you know, feigned outrage when Cecil the Lion gets shot. It's all part of the we're all heroes. I never heard you talking about lions or prides or Cecil or hunting or anything, but you've just joined the herd of people that are outraged over Cecil the Lion. All right, so I don't know where we started, but I know Chet Waterhouse is on
line. Oh, he's on the phone? All right, this will keep then, but be thinking about how we can take advantage of Matt Money Smith. Go ahead,
I'd like
Ace.
Yes, I agree with us. Hey, Chet Waterhouse?
Oh, brother, guys, I was just wondering quick. I know you're in the middle of something incredibly intellectually deep. Could you settle a bet for me? This is a simple one. Vern Lundquist or Don Crickey? Go.
Wow. Heavy.
Yeah. Feel like they've done a lot of golf, right? And they've done a lot of everything, but they've done a lot of racing and golf, and I'm going Vern Lundquist.
Vern is a beauty. You know, Vern, by the way, people don't recognize this. You know, in Super Bowl 13 when Jackie Smith drops that touchdown pass against the Steelers, he's like, oh, bless his heart, he's got to be the sickest man in America.
Right.
That's Vern Lundquist. He was the play-by-play man for the Cowboys way back when.
Can I tell you one of the greatest athletic feats? You know, you see a lot of, you know, Lynn Swan going out of bounds, but sort of doing a pirouette and coming back in bounds and catching the ball.
That's his best catch of Super Bowl X, by the way, not the one where he falls over himself in the DB midfield.
I agree. They're also rubber band man, quarterback for Philly who gets hit, and
Randall Cunningham.
Randall Cunningham looks like he's down on the ground. Mm-hmm. He pops. There's a bunch of crazy athletic feats. You know, there's 5 or 10 that sort of jump to mind in the NFL. Of course, the one-handed catch
by Odell
a couple years ago. One of the greatest unsung moves is when Jackie Smith drops the ball.
I know. You're so right.
He
about
does
what
a move where he pops his entire body 7 inches off the ground. I mean,
using his neck, like he like pops the rest of his body off the ground.
I would challenge anyone to get in full uniform, do play 3.5 quarters of football and then lie on the ground on your back and see if you could just, not elevate. Using your hands, just popping up, like literally get your entire 240-pound body off of the ground.
Yeah, take that, David Blaine. Yeah, but Don Kroenke is the forgotten voice of our youth, I feel. He and Chas Jones don't get their due. They had the greatest gravel play-by-play voices. And Kroenke and Trumpy, the thing I remember about Kroenke, too, is my old man, well, because his partner was always Bob Trumpy. My old man for a decade complained when Trumpy was assigned to the Steelers broadcast because he had it in for the Steelers. My old man thought there was a conspiracy against Pittsburgh. Sorry about that, Chet.
Chet.
Oh, that's all right. Listen, if it's Lundquist, I won myself $4. That question brought to you by Sticklers.com, the anal retentive dating site. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thank you, Chet Waterhouse. Hey, can I tell you... He's a national treasure. The wideout who had all the potential in the world. I brought it up to Sheck before. It's been a long time since I brought it up to you guys listening. The wideout for the Raiders in the early 2000s and into the 2000s. Not Parker.
Jerry Porter. Pittsburgh's own.
Jerry Porter. Jerry Porter, who I met as a rookie when I was doing a man show bit. Incredible athlete, did something that it doesn't look like much, but he used to like to get up off of his back by kicking both feet
right.
behind him and then standing up without the use of his arms. I would challenge anybody to lay down on your back, put a football in your chest. Now, he's wearing a helmet and shoulder pads as well, so he's mm-hmm. top heavy. Then, 240 pounds, 230 pounds. You then, while you're lying on your back, kick both your feet behind you. So you're sitting in a weird kind of yoga position with your two heels where your hips are. And then you just get up.
You don't lean
forward. He didn't do like a, like, here we go, like a big jolty, you know, that move where the guy's doing curls, but mm-hmm. it's all back and legs and he's throwing himself. He just leaned up from that position. If you ever even just try to lay down on your bedroom floor and get your heels back there, you probably can't get your heels back there. If you can, you can't budge. And he would just lean up.
Bo Jackson seemed to have the most of those in his bag of tricks. He would do things that were like, wait, what just happened? Like when he ran up the outfield wall.
Right.
I wonder, is that something you can do if you just have the courage to try to do it?
Seems
like you can't get your body at a 90-degree angle on the wall and not fall.
I feel like there are, Daryl Green may have pulled that off.
Yeah,
handful of speedy guys in the league. Did Jerry Porter stand up without using your hands from your back? I don't know who could do that. First, you got to kick your feet back. I don't even know how you get your feet into that position.
That's right. Yeah, that would be the first step. I wouldn't be able to pull that one off. That reminds me that when you talk about the Raiders thing, that was Man Show, just a little after the turn of the millennium. So you're up at the Raiders camp. You performed, as you later would do for Tom Cruise and his mother at Kimmel's house watching football one day. You did your end zone celebration pooping the football,
yes.
reading the newspaper.
Right.
Then Super Bowl 49. I'm sitting there, and I happen to be right near the end zone where Doug Baldwin of the Seahawks scores a touchdown. I watch him poop the football for all the world to see. I go crazy. I'm like, uh-oh, the internet is about to break. He just pooped the football. And by the way, he didn't give any sort of copyright notice to Adam Carolla.
Mm.
He got fined heavily by the NFL. I wonder if you should feel obliged to chip in on that fine. But either way, that Doug Baldwin, he never gave you any credit for the poop football dance. I don't think we've ever talked about that. Where'd you come down on it?
I wish he had incorporated the sports page like I did.
Yeah, that was the better
thing. I would read the newspaper. It started with a lot of foreplay, reading, just thumbing through the newspaper. I don't even know if kids today would know what that was, but I would have to sit.
Maybe
for
you're
a while.
On your iPhone. Just update it. You're sitting on your iPhone while you take care
yeah,
of
I guess so. Yeah. Like an iPhone. Yeah, I'd have to be doing a scrolling thing or mm-hmm. something like that. And then the grimace and then the Duke. look, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I take it.
That's, you know what? That's you're the bigger man. Staying in California, because that was you did that at Oakland Raiders camp. Let's get back to those Chargers real quick, or we can do this on another one. I think at least, I mean, certainly I would like to get season tickets at the 50-yard line at in the row of our choosing ace from Matt Money Smith. Surely he can pull that off.
The field's only 60 yards long, so we'd be at the 30.
Yeah, I forgot that they had to modify that. Shouldn't we get to hang out with Phil Rivers or any other Charger of our choosing? We should be able to break bread with him if we want. But at minimum,
it'd be nice for us to have a conversation with Phil Rivers that were 189 versions of this. I was watching you, I think it was a Thursday night game in, God, it must have been 2011. Man, you guys almost won. Man, that was close. Woo, that was almost a hell of a comeback. Woo! I mean, you guys almost came back.
Wow, that was a heartbreaker,
yeah,
man.
That was a heartbreaker.
That one must have stuck with you.
Oh, and then I remember the next week I was watching on the NFL package. Oh, man, you guys came
that
this close.
That one must have stuck with you.
That one stuck. I mean, you were within a cat's whisker of winning that.
Imagine Phil Rivers making his list of heartbreaking losses. That would be the worst list ever. I think what we need to do is, Ace, you've got a good brain on you or in you. So come up with what could we have Matt Money Smith say after a touchdown or a safety or a block punt or a fumble? Give him something that he can run with. You say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah.
How about we plant the seed and we
watch
Matt Money Smith grow it over the years?
Okay, I got it. All right, let's
I'd like to do Fruzenglaja.
That's good.
Fruzenglaja! 2-point conversion.
Yeah.
Tuzenglaja. Get it to Gary. Send that off to Matt Money Smith as soon as possible.
We'll announce it for the next show.
All right. Good to hear from Chet Waterhouse. For Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek here. Thanks for listening. Podcast One Sports. Good sports. Good sports.
Nelson in studio, the voice behind that. Lucas Nelson and the Promise of the Real. It's the name of the album. It's available on digital audio platforms, all of them. You can get vinyl or CD if you're old school. Available on Amazon.
That might be my new stripper song. Is that okay with you?
Yes.
My God.
I like that. Good to see you, Lucas.
Thank you. Good to see you, too.
I'm reading about you here. Very interesting. Lots of stuff to get to. You grew up in Hawaii.
Yeah, from an early age, yeah. I grew up there.
Why?
Dad had a place there from like 78, just to get away. He liked it out there. He had a couple houses, and then he sold the one, kept the house that I kind of grew up in, and then I went to high school out there, and really, I think the reason that I grew up there was mostly that in Texas, where I was born, in Austin, Dad is so big there that my mom felt like I wouldn't get quite a fair chance at a normal childhood, you know.
That's why we went from North Hollywood to Valley Village. My mom was like, your dad Your dad's a saint in this town. Can do no wrong.
Should ground you.
Big for your britches.
Center you.
Yeah. They won't, you won't get a fair shake at North Hollywood High with your dad.
Yeah,
of course.
Calling you around.
So you go to Hawaii, and Hawaii's probably the best place for that and your dad and name recognition, right?
Yeah, I mean, people knew who he was, but they don't bother him so much over there, and he's got it's kind of a quiet, mellow place. And
what part of Hawaii?
Maui, North Shore of Maui. Beautiful. He's got a house there, and I went to a private school there in upcountry called Seabury Hall, and I was traveling a lot back and forth everywhere while Dad was traveling too. So never really stayed in one place anyway.
And I met your dad a million years ago. He came in and did Love Line.
Oh, he did.
I went. Hung out in his tour bus a little. It smelled a little bit like pot in there.
Come on.
He may have tried pot that. Well, it was probably a phase.
Yeah, maybe it was patchouli and you just thought it was
Well,
pot.
We've definitely taken that and monetized it. Now we've got Willie's Reserve, which is his own pot company, and we do that now in four different states.
Well, he's been in like the R&D phase of Willie's Reserve for like 61 years, so finally...
No kidding. Paying off.
He's been testing it out. Exactly. He's been road testing the weed for 50 years, and now finally...
Oh, man.
How is the weed, the thing that's weird about Willie and the weed, it's named for a good children's book, is most country stuff is about the Jack Daniels and the booze and that group, at least vocally.
Yeah, the hard stuff.
It's about the booze and not about the weed.
Yeah, well, you know, Dad is, he transcends genre, really. And I mean, he's done reggae, he's done blues. And he's done it with the best of them. So, but he's definitely a roots. His roots are, you know, the greatest country songs of all time. He's written some of them, you know, Crazy with Patsy Cline. And I think that when you get to a certain level of musicianship, you respect all different types of mastery. And it doesn't matter what genre it is. And I think that guys like Merle Haggard smoke a bunch of weed too. You know, and you know, Ray Charles and all these guys that had mega country hits. And I don't even call a lot of times what I hear on the radio these days country, in the country radio. I mean, it's more like soft rock with an accent, you know?
Right.
And so
I was just listening to country music yesterday morning with my wife. And this is easy listening.
It's easy listening. But there are some great country musicians. Don't get me wrong. Miranda Lambert, I really love what she does. And there's some great musicians out there that are doing it. But for the most part, the radio is so, driven by, you know, figures and sales and tests. I mean, they have these, you know, it's not really what they feel is good either. I mean, you go around and you talk to a lot of the record executives in Nashville and they laugh about how shit most of it is, you know?
Well, I think that the lament of the DJ is we used to get a feel for the DJ was like a chef and that you'd go, here's what I've experienced. Here's what I like. I've traveled to Europe. I've experienced these flavors. I traveled to India. Now I'm going to bring them back and I'm going to share them with you. And like when I got started with K-Rock, that the whole reason they had all their DJs is those DJs would go out and put together their menu. Mm-hmm. Now everyone just works at a Golden Corral. Like the chef is basically just refilling the bucket of Mojo potatoes.
You know,
he's not cooking his own thing anymore. They've just done a thing. There's a menu: Mojo potatoes,
it's
chicken over here, carrots over there. Yeah. Just go fill it up.
Yeah.
And the DJs just feel like they're sitting there pushing buttons,
which they are doing. Yeah.
And it's kind of our loss, because I remember listening to the Jed the Fishes and, of course, the Rodney Bingenheimers and all the guys on K-Rock and beyond, you know, on KLOS and all KMET. And
Jim Ladd, they go, let me
give you a deep cut. Let me give you something I heard. Let me give you one I was listening to the other day. Let me share my expertise and what I've learned.
Let me turn you on to this. And that's, you know, I think that the internet, I was listening to what y'all were talking about in terms of podcasts and radio being, an alternative and you have the far left and the far right. But in terms of the music world, too, now we have these different avenues to where we can, if we want to, go and get really deep cuts. And so it's just a matter of trying to bring more of a demand for that in the mainstream. And I think that it'll probably come as soon as – I mean, even these super pop stars now are having trouble selling records. Actual records, you know, yeah. and these record labels are dying in a way, trying to follow the main, you know, vein of revenue. You know, that's what they're all about. So I think that eventually one of them is going to take a risk and go out on a limb, and then there's going to be hopefully some way to help the artists get out there, the real true artists develop in the next maybe 10, 15 years. I'm hoping.
Well, you know, it's actually kind of a unintended consequence, but we're having a renaissance for live performance.
And that's the real money. That's the game.
That's where I think traditionally bands, especially bands that had been there and done that, didn't like going out on the road. They like cutting a record in a studio, releasing it, selling 5 million copies, and doing some coke.
The Beatles.
And taking a nap. They didn't want to go out. Now everyone has to go out. But the winner is the audience.
Because
you get to go out and see great live music all the time.
And live music is really where it should start, in my opinion. It should start with you going and just being completely immersed in the musical experience. And then you say, well, I want to keep that going, so I'm going to buy the record and get, maybe 70% of what I experienced at that show in my car or in my, home, after a joint, and so I get to maybe kind of relive that. And so that's why I think live artists and people who really hone their live show have the best chance of surviving in this musical world.
Well, how about the then creation of the song? Because I've done a lot of improvisational comedy, and they always kind of tell you get out there, you start with the premise, you start working it out, and you kind of work it out on stage, and then it becomes official at some point later on. So songwriting, sitting on an airplane, writing on a cocktail napkin versus jamming on a tour bus or what have you. Like, what works for you?
Well, all of the above actually work for me. I'm lucky in a way because I feel like I grew up traveling so much and being on the bus or being, on the road to where that feels like home to me, to where I can write on the road. And a lot of musicians can't. Right on the go. A lot of musicians feel like they have to lock themselves away or find a quiet place. And for me, the back of the bus is just as easy to write a song in, if not more. At 4 a.m, I'll have come off a show where the crowd really inspired me, or I feel like, okay, something's happening and people are listening. And then I get this song in my head and I have to write it down. I'll go in the back of the bus and I'll put it on my iPhone. I'll just record a voice memo of that song, and then I'll write the lyrics. And then by the time I'm done with a tour, I've got a whole nother album written, so that it keeps material fresh and it keeps me providing material for my career in the future.
I have a weed related question.
Yeah.
Which is so many, I mean, the kill, what kills so many bands and so many artists. I mean, your dad is, I don't know how old your dad is now.
84.
84. Wow. Out there, still out playing,
he's
making
rocking.
Music, doing his thing. Hasn't missed a beat. And I don't know all the ups and downs of your dad's life, but...
There's a few.
I know he owed the IRS a couple of bucks and has been a divorce or two.
$30 million,
But what I'm saying is this. What really destroys these guys are booze and drugs.
Yep.
I mean, real drugs. Mm-hmm. And coke and heroin or whatever. And booze.
Right.
It just destroys
them. Booze is the number one
and
killer.
If your dad is... His weapon of choice is weed.
Yep.
I'm guessing. And his basically where everyone else after the show would have a drink and then maybe have a few too many drinks and then maybe start the next morning with a drink. Your dad's doing pot.
Oh, yeah.
And now he's 84 and out there playing around and many of these other people are dead.
Well, look at really who's lasted in terms of that this generation you've got.
But your dad never was a drinker.
He was when he was in his – I mean, you have to remember, Dad didn't even make it until he was late 30s when he wrote Crazy.
Rodney Dangerfield of country music.
He really started becoming super famous when he left Nashville and went and did his own thing down in Austin and became a hippie cowboy. And he brought the hippies and the rednecks together, and that was like kind of – he's credited for bringing those two cultures together.
Can he do that again?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a constant
battle.
More
than ever.
But to go back to your point, when he quit drinking, it saved his life. And he and Keith Richards and all these guys that smoke a lot of weed are the ones that are still out there and still doing it at their old age. And there's something to be said about that, because as musicians, we kind of need a vice. We kind of need something to slow down our minds.
I was about to say, you know, it's like impossible to walk off a stage
and not
reach for something.
Yes, exactly. And unless you're a massive yogi, maybe like Sting or something, you know, where you're like,
well, he's into the tantric stuff. Yeah, everyone has their vice,
right? Yeah. But which is true. But you know, like, unless you can really just, you know, you have that kind of
center yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have a certain level of discipline. But I feel like what Dad has is a balance of he's got a few vices, but they won't kill him. And he's got a few, you know, he's got a great balance in life. And I think that's the key. He runs, or gets on his bike. He keeps himself in shape. I don't drink very much at all, because I've seen, okay, this is the way that you can last until you're 84, just by looking at my dad and a few other choice subjects, you know? I mean, they just don't.
Pro and con. I mean, you've seen a lot go down the other way,
I've seen a lot go down the other way. And the ones who drink are the ones who don't last. Yep. The ones who drink a lot, you know?
Well, I'm glad you have reverence for your father.
Oh, absolutely.
There's so many people you talk to who, I don't know, is it Jacob Dylan or somebody like that?
It's just a waste of my time.
That's my son. But they just go, don't ask about his dad. Like, and it's like, I don't know. Why not? Your dad's Bob Dylan. You know, it's like, don't. Yeah. He doesn't want to.
It's tricky.
It's, like, well, it's weird. I like that. So you never know when you talk to the son or daughter of a famous person,
right,
if you can even bring up their parents. And I'm glad that you're proud of your dad.
I'm not insecure about that, and because I've spent a lot of time practicing, and I've spent a lot of time on the road playing shows with a band that I am confident is good as any band out there. I mean, we're Neil Young's band right now. We played Desert Trip, and we're one of the favorites of the whole weekend with Bob Dylan, speaking of, with Rolling Stones and Paul McCartney and The Who and all these guys. We played a huge show out there in the desert, and my band and Neil were, in many people's opinions, the favorite. And I feel so proud of the musicians that I've learned with and grown up with in the last 12 years. I've been playing 250 shows a year, and I've been practicing, and I write good songs, and I know I do. And so, and I also know that I would be nowhere without my dad in terms of inspiration, in yeah. terms of the ability to have time to practice, learning, and of meeting all these different people who inspired me in different ways. And so, while I respect any other musician's son for the intricacies and complications of what kind of pain they might have, or what kind of lessons they might need to learn still about where they were thrown into this life for this reason. Why was I thrown into this life as this person? You know, why do I have to play this avatar? You know, I don't get it. But, you know, to me, I feel very lucky that my dad is who he is as a human being, a kind, genuine person that I've known for a long time, and of course, all sure. my life, you know, and I've known how he's led by example, so I'm proud of him.
I don't want to be a one-upper, but you're only 28, and I'm 53, so I've known him longer.
You've known him longer, that's fine. And I respect that, too. There's a whole lot of people out there that, I mean, I get it every show. I met your dad in 1973, and he had a beer with me. And,
I love your very healthy approach to my question, which is, I for a couple things. I feel like a lot of these people, don't own their own success, or maybe feeling a little less confident about their ability, and they don't want to live in the shadow of their dad, so don't bring him up. Right, and I like your answer, which is we're good. He's good, and so are we.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I write good songs.
Yeah.
I love it when people own their ability. And they go, and I work real hard, and we practice a lot, and the people like us. And it's not a, aw, shucks kind of thing where you go, well, they liked everyone evenly. No, they liked you guys better. That's fine. I know Bradley Cooper came up to you.
Yeah.
He was blown away, right?
At the Desert Trip show. And, and Neil. I mean, just to have Neil's respect and affection, you know, and to be... I'm proud of us, you know, for what we do.
Well, tell us the Bradley Cooper story, and then I'm going to ask you if you can get Neil some conditioner and give it to him and go, this is from Adam, and see how he responds.
I'd probably laugh. He's in a great mood these days.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's happy.
So tell us about Bradley Cooper and how that went down.
Well, you know, we were playing Desert Trip, and he saw us, and he kind of looked at me and said, I want that guy to consult me because I'm going to do this movie.
Star is Born. Right.
With Lady Gaga.
Right. So it was Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand.
Right. And like, then before that, it was like Judy Garland and somebody else.
Right,
and
right.
There was even one before that.
Right. Yeah. So he went to the show just... to go to the show, he saw you, and he said, I want this guy helping me craft my onstage. You know, I want to look like a real musician.
Yeah, he wants to be authentic in the presentation. And, I mean, I sat with him for months before they started filming, and we worked on his singing, and we worked on the songs that we were going to... And then I started writing songs for the movie, just sending them just to see. And they used a lot of my songs, and a lot of the songs I wrote with... Stephanie Germanotta, Lady Gaga, and she is, you know, and so then we started working together. And then at first they were going to use another band for the movie, and then they ended up using my band, Promise of the Real, for the movie to act as well.
Right.
So we're playing the music. I wrote some of the music, and then I'm consulting, and it became a production of this movie with Bradley and Stephanie, whom I became good friends with as well. And now they're like my brother and sister. I mean, we're really close.
How's Bradley's singing voice?
He's incredible. I mean, I heard him say that, that the Warner Brothers is so excited about this. I think they moved it up. The release to May.
Oh, that's a good sign.
To May. So, like, it you know, it started out as, you know, well, is this going to work? And then now they're really excited about it and because of the edit that he showed them, you know? And so, I mean, his voice.
Is he directing it as well?
He's directing it, too.
Wow.
And the guy's got cojones, you know? He's got balls. And he's really talented as a singer, too. And as a music. I mean, he's a huge Neil Young fan. That's why he was at Desert Trip. And actually, Neil was the only one he flew out there, I guess, or drove out there just to see Neil, and then he had to leave. And so, I don't know if you saw a clip of him on like the Tonight Show or something, but he air guitared the whole Down by the River solo. This was a year or two ago.
Oh, before.
And so that's kind of when I first realized that he was, and Neil too, that he was a music fan. And he's amazingly musical. I'm blown away. And I think the audiences are going to be blown away as well at how his voice sounds, because it's a real country voice, and it's a real rock and roll voice, and he's good.
So it starts off – I always like these stories because you start off just genuinely wanting to help, flattered that he asked, wanting to be involved. And then it's kind of like we're talking about Arlie Ermey in Full Metal Jacket. He started as a consultant.
Yeah.
Eventually, you end up being in the movie because who's better than you?
And being iconic.
But just for everyone listening, show up, get involved, start proving yourself week after week, and then eventually the powers that be will go, why are we auditioning different folks for a backup band when we have a backup band?
That all has a vibe together, that we, you know,
you
that we've been on the road together, so we look authentic already, and it just works, you know.
Why don't we do a song? You want to do a song?
Sure.
I'll do a little business. You get ready. You'll get the guitar up. I'll tell you about Forza Motorsports 7 on Xbox One. out October 3rd. That's coming up. When is that? Tomorrow? The day after tomorrow? It's got to be coming, right? Exclusively on Xbox One and Windows 10. Collect and race 700-plus cars, including Le Mans-winning Shelby Cobra Daytona Coupe. Love that car, and the GT40, as seen in the 24-Hour War. Well, that's my movie. Gorgeous graphics, 4K resolution, 60 frames per second, 30 famous destinations, including Laguna Seca, Sonoma, Long Beach, Watkins Glen, legendary Monza, Nürburgring. Buy the digital version now and get the Hoonigan car pack featuring Ken Block. We know Ken Block. I hung out with Ken Block. I shot a commercial for these guys with Ken Block. He's got his 1965 Mustang Hoonicorn, and you can get that car in the package for free. Go to Forza 7. Forza 7 out October. Is it tomorrow? Today?
Tuesday.
Tuesday. Oh, you're pointing at something else. Sorry. Tuesday. What the hell day is it? What am I getting so lost for?
As we record, it's a week from today.
Oh, it's a week from today.
But as you listen, it's Tuesday.
As you listen, it's Tuesday. Right. That's what I wanted to say. All right, Lucas, what do you got for us?
Well, this is a song that I wrote about this girl named Georgia that I kind of was seeing. And the complications of that situation were that after we stopped seeing each other, I had to go out as I was playing with my dad in his band and play that song Georgia on my mind every night. And so it made it impossible to forget about her. So I wrote a song called Forget About Georgia. And here it is. Sure as hell didn't love her this much when I met her. Much as I was just captured again and again, she could turn her eyes away and still hold me under. A river of beauty and mystery pulling me in. And then when she told me her name, I knew I would die slowly. I knew I was destined to live with this pain every night. For each night I stand with my father playing our music. We cry out her name and her memory under the lights. So each night I pray I forget about Georgia, 'cause she'll never love me like I know love's supposed to be. Each night I pray I forget about Georgia, but a part of me hopes that she'll never forget about me. Oh, part of me hopes that she'll never forget about me. We made love for the first time in a hotel in San Francisco. A night so perfect I try to forget about it now. And Ray Charles is singing her name like rain on my window. And I want to release her, but I can't begin to know how. So I say, Ray, let me forget about Georgia, 'cause she'll never love me like I know love's supposed to be. I say, Ray, let me forget about Georgia,
But a part of me hopes that she'll never forget about me. Part of me hopes that she'll never forget about me. Forget about Georgia. Cause she'll never love me like I know love's supposed to be. I say, Ray, let me forget about Georgia. But a part of me hopes that she'll never forget about me. Oh, part of me hopes that she'll never forget about me. Part of me hopes that she'll never forget about me.
So good. Lyrics matter, kids. It drives me nuts. I love good lyrics. Thanks, I love them, and I hate them when people they don't count. Yeah. Like, or they're okay. Like, it drives me nuts. I like John Hyatt and bothered by a lot of other people. I like listening to the lyrics.
Thanks, me too. And,
that got me right in my tear ducts.
Yeah, very beautiful.
Thank you.
I'm so impressed, Lucas. I really am. I'm just so impressed with you. I think you're a role model for anyone famous who had a kid. And also, so much talent because, lot of the time it's like, it's a facsimile of what dad does or not quite the chops or didn't take the time to learn the instrument or whatever it is.
What he said is
your dad sucks.
Yeah.
No.
I'm saying I just love that you take this. Did you take as much pride in it as you do?
Sure, I love it,
and that you own it. And I couldn't be more impressed.
Well, thank you.
Album I should tell people: Lucas Nelson and the Promise of the Real is the 4 studio album. It's available right now on all digital audio platforms, and then you can do the vinyl and the CD available on Amazon if you like. And for tour dates and more, you can go to Lucas with a K. LucasNelson.com. Lucas, you want to hang out? We'll do a little news.
Yeah,
you
let's
can,
do it.
You can chime in.
Sure.
Let's do it, Gina Grad.
All right.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
There's been a lot of heavy stuff in the news, and there will be again. So I thought we'd start off on a lighter note. There's yet another edition of Jimmy Kimmel's famous celebrities reading mean tweets that was on Monday night. This is the 11th edition. I haven't laughed this hard in a long time. Here's about a minute's worth of these celebrities reading mean tweets. I think we have John Lithgow, Jim Parsons, Michael Keaton, Alec Baldwin, and Camille Nanjiani. Yeah.
It's always satisfying. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on. I've done this a few times when I've been a guest on the show. I try to read all my tweets. I'm always surprised on how many horrible tweets they dig up for you, even when you go home and monitor all your horrible tweets. They always find ones you've never seen before.
If you'll notice, a lot of these don't tag the person, so they're just, you know, tweeting about the person without saying,
right.
Hey.
Oh, so that's how you can find more horrible things about yourself.
All right, but insanely, why did you tell him, Brian?
Insanely satisfying. I only see the ones people send me. Yeah. All right, John Lithgow.
Yeah.
I bet the John Lithgow's ball sack looks exactly like his face. My face is not complimented, but my ball sack is.
Jim Parsons looks like a ventriloquist dummy that came to life to become a sex offender. Oh,
someone just told me I smiled like Michael Keaton, and I don't know if I should take 1 million selfies or put a gun in my mouth. I'd put a gun in your mouth.
That real Donald Trump writes, just tried watching Saturday Night Live. Unwatchable. Totally biased, not funny, and the Baldwin impersonation just can't get any worse. Sad.
Is Kumail Nanjiani's multiple colors? Yes. Every shade of your mom's lipstick.
Oh, wait.
And her butthole.
Oh. I love it.
So future good. Oscar nominee right there.
That yeah. was great. Just goes to show, you know, just a very simple concept, always the best comedically.
Yeah.
Just come up with tweets. You know, don't do anything. Just get celebrities to go read their own horrible tweets, and it's so insanely satisfying.
Yeah, and I think people come down on both sides of, you know, well, is it perpetuating bullying and cyberbullying? But
no.
Personally, I couldn't disagree more. I think seeing celebrities
do
read the
do
stuff.
That? Nobody yeah. has that yeah. thought.
I'm going to send them a horrible tweet.
They do? They don't like it?
Because I put this up today on my Facebook page, and even I got an influx of it's, you know, promote cyberbullying. And I really couldn't disagree more. I think seeing celebrities handle this kind of stuff with levity and, you know, with laughing it off, I think makes a huge difference in how we all handle
things. Well, the thing about the bullying or the cyberbullying is you're never going to stop the one direction. You can only stop the ingestion or how it's ingested.
Right.
So it's basically cyberbullying is air, and then you have to figure out how you breathe it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
if you're doing it through a straw in one nostril, you might suffocate. But if you just go, I don't care. So we have an ass backward approach to a lot of societal problems. Our society, our plan with cyberbullying is stop 14-year-olds from being snarky to other 14-year-olds through a modality that's impossible to trace
to
and they can do it anytime they want. That's an impossibility. But teaching other 14-year-olds to have a sense of humor about it, to laugh it off, and how to handle it, that is controllable.
Yeah,
but we don't work on that part. We work on stamping it out. Mm. But stamping it out is not possible.
No. Yeah. There's a lot of that going on in our society. You're right. You know, just trying to tackle issues that are just human issues that are impossible to eradicate completely. But if we knew how to deal with them properly, they wouldn't be problems anymore. You
know? Yes. Wise words. Every single thing, every single discussion we have about, you know, police brutality is about what the cops did, what they could have done, what they should have done. Nobody says, if a cop says stop, stop. If a cop says lay down, lay down. If a cop says put your hands up, just do it. Like, you can sue them later. You can argue about it later. Just do what the cop says when the cop says to do it at that particular moment. And then later on, sue the police department for wrongful whatever it is. Yeah. But in the attempt to get less people shot by cops in this society of any color, just put the message out. Just do whatever the cop does. Maybe the cop is confused. Maybe he thinks you're somebody else. Maybe the cop is the worst cop in the world. Just do what he says for this window. And
so
then
the problem
will get through that window.
And they have videos, evidence of, unfortunately, people complying completely and still getting shot. And that's where you have an issue.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. But I think your chances, your percentage-wise, it goes up if you just kiss their ass for that one moment.
Well, there's some regret from the Steelers about their decision during the national anthem on a couple of sides. I don't know if you heard both sides of this yet. Well, Ben Roethlisberger put out a statement on his personal website wondering if the team did the right thing by staying in the locker room during the national anthem. Left tackle and former Army Ranger Alejandro Villanueva says he asked Roethlisberger to revise the team's original plan of remaining in the locker room during the anthem and didn't realize the team wasn't standing with him. Villanueva made a statement, according to Sports Illustrated, saying, quote, I made Coach Tomlin look bad, and that is my fault and my fault only. I made my teammates look bad, and that is my fault and my fault only. He added,
I feel like, I don't know, there's too many reads on too many things. I feel like the coach said, look, everyone stay in the locker room because I don't want everyone to see all the different various ways we're either protesting or not protesting. We'll make it about our, we'll make it our business and we'll stay here. And then this guy went, I'm an Army Ranger, so I'm going to go out and face the flag. And I think everyone just sort of went, okay, well, he's an Army Ranger. He wants to go do that.
And he seems like such a sincere dude. So according to him, I guess the final verdict from Roethlisberger, who I guess was kind of in charge of this, was that everyone was going to stay in the tunnel. And Villanueva said, well, I'm going to come out kind of to the front of the tunnel so I can see the flag. That's important to me. And didn't realize that he didn't say, yes, great idea. Let's all do that. So he felt uncomfortable, like he abandoned his team, like he made them look bad. And Ben saying, I don't know if we should have done. So they both had their issues with
Nobody
it.
Nobody cares.
You think they didn't.
They don't care. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. This is, we need an earthquake. We need something. God. We need something. We got to shake
it
up.
Get out of our heads.
Literally. We're arguing over nothing. We're discussing nothing. I just felt like this guy was a service guy, so he wanted to face the flag, and good for him.
Yeah. How do you feel about Anthony Weiner?
His face is too skinny.
Okay. Well, he is, of course, the disgraced former human.
Him and his wife, someone needs to, can I buy a gel? Between him and his wife, Uma, there's not an ounce of facial fat in the whole family. His ex.
He kind of looks like a really skinny version of Lance Armstrong.
Oh, wow. He does. Yeah, like if the cancer had really taken hold. Yes, he does look like Lance Armstrong if the cancer, like one of the last pictures of Lance Armstrong before he lost the very final battle. There's that. I like that he is defiant about taking pictures of his joint and sending it to people. Like
His son resting on his chest. Yeah.
I like that next time you use a quarter for scale like I do. Don't use your boy. But I feel like... We got to have scale. When you send a dick pic, you need scale.
Because how else are we to know? The receiver to know.
Right.
Because of the belly button. That's why.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah, they can move around.
Wait, if they can reach your belly button, you might be onto something.
That's the thing.
Okay.
I am very fascinated in people's inability to stop themselves from destroying whatever it is. Like you guys heard me say it a million times. You've seen it around here on smaller scales, but... Whatever happens to you, you will do it to yourself. Mm. He's on the cusp of stepping stone away from the White House and his wife and running for and being elected and
all that.
Could not prevent himself from taking a picture of his dick and sending it out.
Yep.
I take issue with that, though. I think if you're married, that's a problem for your own, but
yeah,
people on Snapchat, people in this generation, cyber sex is huge. It's just part of everything. I mean,
it's a salutation.
I think you should be able to send whatever you want everywhere if you want to.
Well, Lucas, get your yeah, but still ready. I believe it was because he was texting a minor.
I don't follow the wiener, so to speak.
Well, let me just give you the broad strokes here. So he's now the disgraced former congressman. He pleaded guilty in May to sexting a 15-year-old.
Oh.
He was sentenced
Lucas,
Monday.
You're saying? Anyone, anytime.
Please,
I retract my statement and still hope people will vote for me.
Yeah. He was sentenced Monday to 21 months in prison. The 53-year-old faces spending the rest of his life as a registered sex offender for this lengthy and lurid social media contact with this North Carolina teen. That's not all, though. That's not where this started. He resigned his seat in 2011 after admitting to exchanging messages and photos of an explicit nature with about six women over a three-year period of time. Weiner attempted a comeback and was running for mayor of New York in 2013. Great documentary, by the way. When it was revealed that he was sending explicit photos to a 22-year-old Sydney Leathers, I believe, under the name Carlos Danger. And this came at a terrible time. The relationship became a crucial factor in the 2016 presidential campaign when then FBI Director James Comey reopened an investigation into the Clinton emails less than 2 weeks before Election Day. The FBI cited a batch of emails discovered in the Weiner probe. So these all of this was linked together. Days later, the FBI said nothing new or damaging happened against Hillary Clinton, but this did not help in the final moments of this campaign.
No, and now he's divorced,
right? From Huma Abedin.
How is his name Wiener and this is all happening? It just seems divine.
Yeah.
That just this all happens to this guy named Wiener.
It was preordained.
Prophecy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when these assholes name their kids Jesse James something and then it turns out the guy's a criminal.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Come on, you named him Jesse
twins,
James.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Right.
Or
right.
like even like on another, you know, like you guys you have people in sports that like Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
You know, wood iron, you know, being like,
preordained.
Like, it's like, yeah, these people are made name wise to do what they do.
Yeah.
I wonder, is it Huma?
Huma Abedin.
Huma Abedin. She's taken off with a new, she got a new guy.
Oh.
She married Alec Baldwin, right? Different chick?
That's Hilaria.
they're very similar in their looks.
No, you're thinking of, George Clooney's wife.
Clooney, Baldwin, and Wiener.
Oh,
their wives are all kind of cut out of the same cloth.
Yeah.
Very slender, dark-skinned. Mm-hmm. You know, look like they could do multiple yoga positions.
Yes. What is her name? That's going to drive me crazy. George Clooney's wife.
Amalia?
That's the
close.
Other part. Can anyone have a name? Can anyone? Look. Yes. There's malaria, Amal.
All right.
There's Amal, Huma, and
Hilaria, and Melania.
Yes, anyone named Becky anymore? You know what I mean? It's so hard.
There's no Becky.
It's too tough.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, in slightly less egregious, but still egregious in its own way, news. Tom Wopat. Remember we talked about him a while back? He was doing some theater and
one of the Dukes of Hazzard.
Correct.
And did some acting.
Yes,
was the sheriff.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
In Django Unchained, right? Yes.
Sorry.
Tom Wopat. From Dukes of Hazzard.
Okay.
Yeah. He was a sheriff.
Bo, I believe. Bo?
No. Luke.
Luke?
Oh, damn. Sorry. I don't remember. Anyway.
All right.
Bo and Luke were the two boys.
Yeah.
Bo.
All right. Well, he's dealing with new assault charges, according to TMZ. The Dukes of Hazzard star was arrested last month for allegedly putting his finger in a woman's butt crack. Now, police have hit the actor with a new charge of felony. It's not funny.
Hold on. Let's hear his side of the story.
A new charge of indecent assault. This time poking a 16-year-old girl in her stomach. According to the docs, he told the teen, quote, "I'm a creepy old man. You're really talented and really cute." Both alleged victims co-starred with Tom on a production of 42nd Street. So he's just kind of making his way around the cast, poking at him.
So I don't know. Hasn't everyone grown up with some like older person doing something sort of stupid to them and you just kind of walking it off or just going like, I'm going to stay away from that nut job.
I did a lot of community theater as a teen.
Whatever.
Yes. Like,
I'm not talking about sexual assault. I just mean guys, sometimes it's alcohol driven, but I mean, just getting out of their lane a little bit, then getting back into their lane, and then you just kind of keep walking, so to speak. Like, you don't, like, everyone doesn't have to be turned in. And because if you really think about almost anything is an assault charge, you physically put your hands on. And I know everyone does this thing all the time where they go, it's not okay to ever touch another human being or what have you. But I'm a dad. I like wrestling with my kids, and when I was...
Occasionally a finger finds its way to the butt.
Yeah.
No, I had a nanny or whoever. I had some help around the house. You know what? She was just like babysitter / nanny / whatever.
Right.
She was going through a divorce. Her kid wasn't really seeing her dad, his dad. Mm-hmm. And... it's like a 5-year-old little rambunctious little kid, and he'd come with her when they'd babysit, and he liked it because he got to run around and play with all Sonny's toys and all that kind of stuff. And at a certain point, we found ourselves in the bedroom, and Tally was jumping off the bed, and I was catching, and Sonny was like, me too. And the kid was standing there, and he wanted in.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to play as well. I remember thinking, I know the dad's estranged, and I think the dad was cheating on the mom and had to move out and blah, blah, blah. And he clearly wanted in on the
daddy
horse
time.
Play.
The affection. Yeah.
The affection.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to be the dad who was like, oh, only my kids. You sit over there and watch sure. longingly. So I had the little kid up on the bed, and he was launching himself at me, and I was catching him, and then now it's Natalia's turn, and I like it that way. Now, I'm not saying that was what Tom was doing, yeah, but I'm saying, like,
that might different. Be a little different.
A little
there.
Different, but we're doing this thing where it's like nobody touches anybody's anything for fear of a lawsuit, and I don't really like that. I don't like everything being assault or everything yeah. being nefarious. Like, and, I don't know, you could poke a 6-year-old girl in the belly and go say something, mm-hmm. and she could walk away and think you're a creep.
Well, but he announced he was a creep.
But just walk away? Like, yeah. it doesn't, not everything needs to be turned over to the authorities, right. I guess is what I'm saying.
I'm wondering if this is a little different because if they're working together as a cast and you kind of, I mean, if you're sitting, you know, kind of in the wing, minding your own business, playing solitaire, whatever, talking to your little friends, and he's just kind of roaming, looming around backstage, this is not like a one-time thing. You're working with this dude for however many weeks. And maybe someone said, I mean, maybe he didn't have to be arrested or brought up on charges, but maybe someone said,
no.
we got to get this guy out of the cast. He's clearly bothering people.
What he said makes a lot of difference, too.
I mean,
if you call yourself a creepy guy and then you poke somebody in the stomach, then you're inviting. I mean, if he would have put his hand on her shoulder and said, you're very beautiful and you're doing great and you're talented. And, you know, I'm just a creepy old guy, even if he said it like that. But when he pokes somebody in the stomach and then you say, I'm creepy, there's like, it's almost like an invitation. I feel like that might be just, but I don't know that he should be arrested for that. But given his history of putting his finger in butt cracks, maybe.
Yeah.
You know,
I got a feeling this just feels like, well, like we talked before, a little less booze, a little more weed, and we could probably avoid
there
these
you go.
Types
that's
of it. Situations.
Willie's Reserve. Everybody, point. That's where we direct
Willie's to. Willie's Reserve. Because I just feel like these are usually, if you talk to Dr. Drew about this kind of behavior, mm-hmm. he'll tell you there's probably some booze creeping into the lifestyle.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let me tell you about Geico, and then we'll do our last story.
Right.
Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you put add onto your list, save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, and you don't have to go anywhere. Just go to your computer, go to Geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Who doesn't want to save a bundle on their auto insurance? Put that extra money in your pocket, and Bob's your uncle. So go to Geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving 15% or more on your car insurance. All right, let's do one more.
All right, because I'd very much like to further prove your point on what you just said about liquor versus weed. Mm. So according to a new study, it's not tequila or rum or whiskey that's most likely to lead you to making poor choices. It's vodka. It ranked first for those who did something dumb enough to get themselves thrown in jail, and ranked first for people who set things on fire when drunk.
What? That's awesome.
Is that just because yeah. more people are drinking yeah. vodka?
It's possible. Yes. Who's not drinking rum in college because it goes down easy?
How do you conduct a study about those who set things on fire when they're drunk? Like, where does that even become a study?
You probably do it in jail and
right,
say, why
right.
are we all here? Who, yeah. What were you? What was the poison?
That's right.
I've done the vodka bottle over the flame just to kind of see it do the thing.
Oh, yeah, the moonshine effect.
Yeah, I like that.
That's
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, and I think vodka is probably the most popular because people mistakenly think it's the lowest calorie.
It's the healthiest, yeah.
Or the healthiest booze for you.
It's also a neutral spirit, so like you can mix it with anything. It'll take on the flavor of whatever you mix it with.
Yeah, yeah. So the Red Bull and vodka
it'll
thing.
Taste like that.
Cranberry
yeah.
juice.
Exactly.
Right, but as we've learned from our own Vinny Tortorich, nutritionist on this show, distilled is distilled. So if you want whiskey, drink whiskey. If you want vodka, drink vodka. But there's no... Your body calorically does not know the difference right. between rum, whiskey, vodka, and what have you, even right. though we think the yeah. clear must somehow be better for you or lower cal.
Although
not
tequila,
so much.
Tequila's often gluten-free.
Tequila's gluten-free?
Yes. Most tequila.
From a cactus.
Yeah, agave.
Whereas mezcal. The vodka's a potato yeah. and thus not gluten-free.
I don't know how. I think that has to do with the distilling process. I'm not sure, but I know that I've been told, hey, man, if you're staying away from gluten, got to go with that tequila.
Yeah, I'm going to get this wrong, but most vodkas in the U.S. now are not from potatoes. I think they're grain whiskey. I think. Mm. Or grain whiskey, a grain alcohol.
All right. But I'm not Gary, gonna... look it up
vodka
now.
Vodka is not gluten-free.
It's now, not gluten. What is tequila. Whiskey? Is whiskey...
That's barley, right?
That's gluten-free.
Barley. It's a grain-based.
Yeah. Just tequila, I think.
But I think somebody said, like, once it gets turned into alcohol, it's a little null and void, or I don't know.
I
don't know. I just love these kinds of discussions.
According to the National Institute of Health's Celiac Disease Awareness Campaign.
Celiac.
Yep. Sorry, I knew I was going to screw that up. Distilled alcohol is inherently gluten-free.
Ooh.
This includes, now this is going against what I saw, but this includes gin, vodka, scotch, whiskey, and rye.
I think it's
that.
Once
and
it,
they didn't
once,
even list tequila there.
No,
once it goes
odd.
Through the process, it's a sort of who cares.
Well, let's go with that answer.
All right, and let's go with Tommy John, man. Ah, awkward underwear adjustments have been plaguing guys for decades, but now there's one company putting an end to this adjustment epidemic. It's Tommy John, 21st century men's underwear, crafted from ultralight, breathable fabrics that move with you. No riding up, time-saving, patented horizontal quick draw fly. These things are just the best. You will not go back to whatever you were currently wearing before Tommy John. That's it. It's that's a, you know how they have the let's see we have the BC and the AD
sure.
and
right.
all that. This is TJ. It's just
before and after Tommy John's.
Yeah, it's just once Tommy John
enters your life,
that's it.
Oh, I thought you said Tommy Chong.
No.
I said, what is he doing underwear now? That's
he makes
he's getting in on your dad's territory. Wait,
never do laundry again.
I was like, wait a second.
He makes the tank and you make the fuel. Plus, socks that stay up all day long, patented undershirts that never come untucked. They're just the best. All backed by the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. It is the best. It's Tommy John. Check it out. What do you got to lose? Dawson.
Hurry to TommyJohn.com and use... Sorry. Hurry to TommyJohn.com and use code Adam to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com, code Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com, code Adam.
And a free bong.
All right. Minneapolis Music Hall, me, October 13th, doing a one-man show. And then Nashville Polk Theater, that'll be October 14th, the next day. Come on out and say hi after the show. Come out and sign autographs and do all that kind of stuff as well. So we'll be there and say hi. You can check out Corolla Drink. And get yourself a little Mangrian, some Endless Rand IPA. And you can leave us a nice review on iTunes. We always appreciate that. Live shows coming up October 5th, Irvine Improv. That'll be us. Jay Moore's going to be up on stage with us. That guy is funny. And when he's on stage, he gets even funnier. So go to AdamCarolla.com for all you need. Lucas Nelson, Lucas Nelson, and the Promise of the Real. Fantastic music.
Thanks.
Available on all the digital audio platforms. And if you want the vinyl or you want the CD, go ahead and grab it on Amazon and bookmark us and click through. It just helps. And go to the website, Lucas with a K. Lucas, L-U-K-A-S, LucasNelson.com, and check out all the live appearances and where he's going to be around town. Thanks, Lucas.
Thank you. You guys are great. Thank
so,
you very
much. Until next time, Adam Kroll for Lucas Nelson, Gina Grad, and Bo Bryan say mahalo. Can I buy a gel?
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail if you want at 888-634-1744. Gina Grad is on the radio weekday mornings at 100.3 The Sound in LA. And you should subscribe to Take a Knee for a weekly dose of inspiration and motivation. Click the archive link at AdamCarolla.com. Now Taco Bell, one-man show hitting Minneapolis October 13th, Nashville October 14th. Get your tickets and everything else at AdamCarolla.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.